Maybe one more minute? Yeah? Hola, senores y senoritas. My accent, I completely screwed up the first line of my session. Sorry about that. Thank you for coming to a 5 p.m. session towards the end of the week. We really appreciate it. Did not expect such a turnout. So, you know, we're going to make this session super cool for you guys. We do have, most of it is going to be demos. I hope you guys are okay with that. We're going to try to steer away from slideware as much as we can and show you as many demos. My name is Anjali Chaudhary, and I'm a PM on the Windows Azure Pack. I'm going to be presenting with Mark Umeno, who's a program manager on the System Center team, and Eamon O'Reilly, who's also a program manager lead on the System Center team. So today we are really going to talk about how you enable private clouds using Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and the new Windows Azure Pack. The first incarnation of the Windows Azure Pack was actually called Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. Have folks in the room heard of it by a show of hands? Few of you? Okay. So Windows Azure Services for Windows Server was released in January 2013, earlier this year. And, you know, it had a little bit of a tagline. It said Windows Azure Services for Windows Server for hosting service providers. But now we have broadened the scope of that to hosting service providers as well as enterprises and how both can enable private clouds on this platform. So without much ado, you will recognize this slide, I'm sure, from the keynote, from multiple other sessions that you have attended through the week. And essentially, this is Microsoft's Cloud OS vision is about enabling consistent experiences across the multiple clouds, whether it's Microsoft's own Windows Azure or it is partner data center. It could be an enterprise, their own IT organization that deploys a private cloud, or it could be a hosting service provider that deploys the same cloud and offers cloud services to their consumers, consumers who also consume Azure services or not. And enabling a set of consistent experiences across all of these clouds. Enabling that is really, you know, the foundation of that is a consistent platform that these clouds are built on, and that is what we are going to talk about. You know, one of the pillars on the slide is about people-centric IT. That's really about enabling self-service experiences when these consumers come to any of these clouds and are able to consume the cloud services. It's completely self-service. They can deploy their own applications. They can scale these applications using the cloud services that are built on this consistent platform. So, you know, but these are some of the services that are as part of the Windows Azure Pack. The first one is websites. It's not traditional IIS website hosting. This is a new web application PaaS platform that is actually, that is also the foundation of the Windows Azure websites. This is essentially the same runtime that has been made to work on the Windows Server and System Center stack as well, which enables high-density, elastic hosting for the consumers. It's fully self-service. Folks can come deploy a website. It will not spin up any VMs. It's going to be a website deployed in a shared space, and through a click of a single button, the consumers can also scale it up, scale it down. They can use integrated source code controls. They can use open source frameworks such as ASP.NET, Node.js, and we'll show you a very cool demo about that in just a few moments. The next one is virtual machines and virtual networks. It's the infrastructure as a service that is provided also on this private cloud space. We are introducing the concept of virtual machine roles. Again, we'll show you a demo about that, on how subscribers can come in, deploy virtual machines, and be able to scale them up as well as down. Subscribers can come in, create their own virtual networks, attach the virtual machines to these virtual networks, and so on and so forth. Mark will show you a very cool demo. And you know, so the first two services, they were also available in Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. In the Windows Azure Pack, which is the next reincarnation, we also introduced Service Bus. This was one of the top asks from hosting service providers. And Service Bus essentially provides you with a reliable messaging framework to send messages from one cloud application to another. And, you know, in today's developers, they need the multiple cloud applications in order to be able to create their deployments. And they may also be on different platforms. They could be on Windows, they could be on Linux, they could be on mainframes. And they will still be able to rely on this messaging framework for messages to be created and peeled off by the backend whenever whenever there is capacity for the backend to be able to do that. And again, this is fully integrated in a self-service model as well, so developers can work against the next part, which is the portal, to create any of these applications. So we're introducing the service management portal and API. The service management portal is essentially the interface where the subscribers come in and use these self-service services. This is a web standards base. It's on HTML5, CSS, and that's why it's device friendly. It can be used on the Surface. It can be used, you know, on a PC, on Chromebooks, etc. And it's customizable, themable. Folks can add their own logos, their colors. And this service management portal actually talks to the API layer. So if folks can directly call the API layer as well through their own custom portals. So I'll just show you a stackable representation of what this looks like. So on the top, we have the service management portal. Folks come in. You know, this is where they view their own account, what services they have available, how they can use them. Okay, I can create a VM, I can start, stop a VM, et cetera, across all of these services. And which goes through the service management API layer, which is actually a REST proxy layer that is aware of all the different services that are plugged in. It also has information about the subscribers to show which services to expose to the user who has signed in. And there, here we have our websites, virtual machines, and service bus that we just spoke about. So just to give you a little bit of like what it entails, like, you know, for websites, a website cloud can be set up using 7 different roles ranging from front ends that act as load balancers and web workers where the actual website content is stored. And if you want to get into the nitty-gritties of this, there was a session actually yesterday morning, but you can probably find it online on Windows Azure websites for the Windows Azure Pack. So you can find more details about that in that session. Virtual machines, it's on Windows Server, System Center 2012 R2, and the virtual machines are created in, and the virtual networks are in the VMM layer that is exposed through the service provider foundation that is built into a resource provider that plugs into the service management API layer. And similarly for Service Bus, it's built on Windows Server, and you know, again, the whole system is packaged into a resource provider that plugs in to the service management API. Now let's go just a little bit deeper into this. So on the left side of the screen, you know, this is Windows Azure. This is Microsoft's public cloud. And let's start from the top. When somebody goes and creates an account in Windows Azure, they come in through the self-subscriber portal, and they have access to a bunch of these services. It's that service management API is that REST proxy layer that we were talking about that pushes all these services, that, you know, proxies all the requests from the portal to the appropriate service. So on Windows Azure, we have websites, VMs, SQL Azure, Service Bus, and so on. And these services, these runtimes are all made to work on the Windows Azure fabric. Now, let's look at how this is moved over to the private cloud. Excuse me. Now, we'll start at the bottom first. There's no Windows Azure Fabric here. It's Windows Server and System Center. Excuse me. The components that you have already invested in. So if you have invested in Windows Server and System Center, there is no need to do anything else. You know, the investment is sound. All you're going to do is now build on top in order to provide the same services. So we bring the same portal, the same self-subscriber portal as the consumer portal on the private cloud. It's actually, you know, it's our sister team that builds this portal. It's the same framework that's brought onto the private cloud. In addition to this self-subscriber portal, we have also provided an administrative portal via which an administrator can, you know, look into the different services, manage the services, and also manage their users and create plans for these different users. Excuse me. Sorry, my voice was fine until half hour ago. I'm not sure what happened. Excuse me about that. So the administrative portal. Now, you know, on Windows Azure, in Microsoft's public cloud, the operations team, they use a lot of PowerShell scripts. They use a lot of custom proprietary tools that they use to do the same things that this administrative portal enables. It's just that for our customers, we provided this way, a cleaner and a nicer way to manage the same things. And now we bring the same service management API. It's been extended to also support the administrative portal. And this is what, this service management API layer is what enables the consistent experiences. It enables the consistent portal, the same operations across these, you know, two figures. So the three platforms across the Microsoft public cloud, service provider cloud, and enterprise. And in this Windows Azure pack, in this specific version, we have brought over websites. We have brought over the virtual machines capability, but instead of the capability provided by Azure, the VM capability is now provided by System Center. And in fact, you know, in this release, you'll see that some of the capabilities that are provided on the private cloud are more in the IaaS space than in the Microsoft's public cloud. And, you know, this is where the parity of experiences, and that is why we call it consistent experiences, as Azure introduces more services, you know, this private cloud will catch up, and private cloud will introduce more services, and Azure will catch up to keep the consistency remaining. And SQL is actually provided by SQL Server, not SQL Azure, but SQL Server, the same SQL Server that you guys already have deployed in your data centers, and we have brought in Service Bus. So as services are added in Azure, we will keep bringing them to the private cloud as well. So that is what the future service is about. Also, third-party ISVs or hosting service providers or enterprises for that matter can plug in their own custom services in this model as well to be exposed through the consumer portal as well as the administrative portal. And essentially, at the end of the day, it's about enabling consistent development experiences across these three different clouds. So, you know, with that, I am going to show you, like I said, enough talking, and I'm going to show you what this Azure consistency is really about. So this is an environment where I'm going to connect to Azure. So now, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed it, I was actually going to Windows Azure, and it redirected me to this corporate logon page. What Microsoft's IT does is it provides accounts to all Microsoft employees for Azure, and we can connect to it using our corporate credentials. So I was redirected to this auth site. So the key here is that we are also supporting Active Directory, you know, through ADFS integration. So that is something that we did not provide in Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, and what we have enabled for Windows Azure Pack. So here I have logged into Windows Azure, and you can see, over here, I'm on Windows Azure. This is me, Anjali C. at Microsoft.com, logged in with my corporate credentials. And soon, these list of services for me are going to be pulled up. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to create a website. How many folks have used this interface? Yeah, quite a few of you. OK. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call this, let's say I'm in Madrid, which I am, and I'm going to be opening up a music store. And I need to create a website for that. So I'm going to create a quickly a website that's the Madrid Music Store. What this is doing is actually sending a request to the web application PaaS, and it is creating a website in a shared space. This is not spinning up a VM role, no individual website running on a, this supports high density web hosting, like we said. So it was created very quickly. So I go into my Madrid Music Store, and here I see a list of options of what I can do. I can use WebMatrix. I can set up deployment through source control. So let's say I already have this application already that I want to push over to this website that I just created, and I'm going to go set up deployment through source control. So here you will see is that I have different options on which repository to use, including GitHub, Dropbox. And what I'm going to use is I'm going to use the local Git repository. I have actually, what this is doing when I select this option, the local Git repository, it is actually setting up a Git repository for my Madrid Music Store website in Azure. This is what this operation is doing. Once this is set up, it provides me the URL to set up a remote connection to it. Now, I'll copy this. And I'll come here. I've actually set up an enlistment on this machine already. And I've copied a music store app from GitHub, just a copy. I haven't really made any modifications. And copied it down locally to this enlistment. So here, I'm going to create a remote connection to this URL. And I'm going to push the top of the enlistment, which is where my music store resides, to this Git repository in the Azure cloud. It's going to ask me for my credentials, which I've already set up. Note that these credentials, these deployment credentials, are different from my user credentials for Azure, because these can be shared across my development and test teams, so we can share this project. Another thing worth noting, this is not any custom Git. This is not Microsoft's Git, Azure Git. This is the Git that developers use already and already know these commands. So what's happening right now is that my application is being packaged and it is being pushed up to the local Git repository in Azure. And as you can see up here on the webpage, Azure already knows that this package is coming up and the deployment happened. If I come here, I can also look up the history of what happened. Like, it was preparing the deployment successful, etc. So this is done. Now if I come to my dashboard, I can see this is just the dashboard for any website. I already have real-time monitoring data from just the last 30 seconds of showing you the Git publication. And I also have data in terms of usage bars over here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hit this site, the Madrid Music Store, and see if it got set up. And sure enough, it's set up. Very quickly, very easily, my Music Store website is already set up. Now, let's say I start selling a couple of very famous flamenco CDs and I'm gonna get a whole lot of traffic here. I can go ahead and scale this website very easily in Azure. I'm sorry, this is really slow, but. So in Azure, we have the concept of this free mode. I can say, no, I actually want a couple more instances. Wait a minute, my traffic really increased, and I want to go ahead and use a dedicated instance, and I can do this in Azure. Okay, cool. This is the Azure experience. Let's see how it is consistent with our private cloud experience. So now, I'm going to go into the private cloud. This is actually, you know, we have set up, we have rented a few virtual machines from SoftLayer in the United States, and we have set up Windows Server, System Center, and the Windows Azure Pack. The preview bits, the same bits that are available for download already, these have been set up in this, you know, in our SoftLayer rental space, and accessible to us through this jump box. Now, this is a mock page that we set up in order to showcase the different forms of identity that we handle. Let's start from the bottom up. So I can clearly provide like just an email address and password and have like a, you know, a pure ASP.NET membership kind of a authentication mechanism. And this is what we supported in our first version. And we have introduced Active Directory support here. So I can go against my local AD, or I can use the Microsoft Active Directory. Let's do that. This is the same page that you saw for Azure. Microsoft IT didn't have to do anything separate. The same auth side showed up. And I'll log in again with my corporate credentials. There we go. I'm logging in right now. And once this pulls up, you will see that it is the same site. It's pretty much the same site. It's the same framework that has come from the Azure portal that has been enabled here. A couple of key differences that I want you to watch out for. Up here, this doesn't say Windows Azure. This says Contoso. This could be Contoso Enterprise or Contoso Hosting. This is also completely customizable. So you can change logos, you can change colors, you can replace this whole portal. You can have your own portal go against these cloud services. I've logged in with my corporate ID. And these are the list of services that are available in Windows Azure Pack today. As we discussed, more services will come, or folks can also plug in their own service right here. You can build UI extensions for it and build it. Now let's talk about consistency. I'm going to go ahead, create a website now on this private cloud. Let's again call it Madrid Music Store. This is going against the same web application pass. In fact, it got done sooner, maybe because it's another private cloud. And this is now available to me to go deploy my application to. I'm going to go again into the source control, set up deployment for source control. And you'll see that the same options are also available over here. I'm going to pick local Git repository. And this is now setting up a Git repository for me in Contoso's cloud. The Git repository is ready. Copy the publishing credentials. And let's go through the same routine again. So Git remote add. I'm going to call this WAP, Windows Azure Pack, and provide the remote connection. Or that's done. Git push, Windows Azure Pack, master. Provided my credentials. And the same process is happening now. The package is being created. It is being pushed to the Git repository that has been set up for the Madrid Music Store in Contoso. So this should be done soon. Contoso is already aware that this package is being pushed. And with any luck, we'll be done in a few seconds. There we go. This should refresh. And the same as before, we can also view the history about the deployment being successful. We come to the dashboard, the same exact dashboard that you had seen before. And we will hit the music site. And sure enough, it is deployed. The exact same application has also been deployed in the private cloud. What about scale, you ask? We go ahead and we can scale. Again, the same experience that you saw in Azure is available here. Here, instead of the free and intro shared, we have the intro shared, basic shared, and the reserved instances. So you can imagine, as a service provider, on the intro shared, you want to provide your commodity hardware. So your SLA for this site is going to be a lot lower than if somebody selects a higher, more expensive plan or the associated hardware with it. If I decide that I want more traffic hitting I'm going to have more traffic hitting my site, I can move to basic shared, or I can just move to a reserved instance, a dedicated reserved instance, like, oh, my site's going to be featured on Oprah tomorrow. I'll pick a few large instances and deploy my site seamlessly. There is no need for redeployment. It will just deploy seamlessly, elastically, to these reserved instances as well. So that is what I wanted to share with you about the Azure consistency. I'm going to quickly move to our administrative portal. Remember, we talked about, oh, there is a self-subscriber portal that we are providing, which we just showed you, and we're also providing an administrative portal through via which the service providers or the enterprise's IT person can come in and manage these services. Now you'll see, hey, the portal is pretty much the same. It is the same framework. Key differences. Now, instead of managing websites, I'm managing website clouds. Instead of just creating VMs, I'm managing virtual machine clouds. Similarly, Service Bus clouds, SQL servers, and MySQL servers. I can go ahead and create, I can manage my users from here. I can see the list of users, exactly what subscriptions they have, etc. And I can drill down and create plans. I can create a gold plan, which is, you know, on my very expensive hardware. Or I can create, like, a test plan, which is, you know, dedicated to my dev and test teams. That it does not, you know, that's built on more of a test hardware and not to the same level as production hardware. So with this is all I want to show you. Mark is going to show you a much deeper dive demo of the administrative portal. Sorry. So, you know, just to recap, there are two audiences for these portals, the consumers and the service providers or the administrators who actually offer the services and administer these services. Service consumers come in through the self-subscriber portal. They buy services, and they use and deploy these applications through the self-subscriber portal. They can acquire capacity on demand, like I showed you, very elastically, very easily. They scaled up to a reserved instance for a website, and they can do the same for virtual machines as well. Service providers, on the other hand, are more interested on, you know, making sure that they're very cost efficient. And this is where the cloud services really help, since they are they are high density and highly scalable services. And service providers can create plans, offer different types of SLAs based on the different plans on their and the different consumers they expect to use the portals. So I'm gonna go over what some of the new things are for each of these services in the Windows Azure pack. You saw most of the stuff 4 websites in this demo. In fact, you even saw this graph of the real-time telemetry data on how users can easily deploy applications. You know, this web application PaaS supports ASP.NET, Node.js, Python, and multiple source code control repositories such as the local Git repository, GitHub, Bitbucket, Dropbox. And folks can scale very easily as well, which is something that service providers are very interested in. Service Bus. This Service Bus was actually, the top ask when we released websites and virtual machines capability in January. Service Bus was the top ask because most hosting service providers wanted to enable their developers to be able to use reliable messaging services so that they could communicate between, their front-end applications and back-end applications. And Service Bus also, it has standard pub/sub messaging patterns. It also supports like .NET, Java, C, and C++. And because applications, may be on different platforms, so I could have a front-end application running on Windows, but a back-end on Linux, or even on a mainframe. Service Bus supports this interoperability between the platforms, and users can come in. They can create queues, which are simple, message transfer queues, and topics, which are a little bit more advanced in the sense that I can publish a whole bunch of messages, but subscribers on the other end can subscribe to specific specific events that they want that are transmitted. So it's a more of a customized, I'm only going to listen into these messages. So both of these capabilities that are available in Azure are also available on the private cloud. And lastly, but not the least, virtual machines. We have the virtual machines and virtual networks capability. Microsoft has it in Azure. And the same experiences are also available on the private cloud, but with, as we discussed, the Windows Server and System Center platform. The service management API, it enables that, the APIs are also consistent across these two very different platforms, and the experiences remain the same or similar at the user level in the self-subscriber portal. We have introduced a new concept of virtual machine roles in this release, and Mark's going to show you a really cool demo. Some of you may have seen a little snippet of this demo in the keynote, Claire's demo, where she created a virtual machine role. It's not just a virtual machine, but it's also an application inside the virtual machine. And there are settings that she could set, configured based off what that virtual machine role enables. So she had set up an IIS server in the demo. Folks can set up SharePoint, Link, any such virtual machine roles. And they can elastically scale it easily up or down, depending on their need, same as we were able to scale the websites up and down. And we support both Windows and Linux, and users are able to create these VMs. They are able to manage these VMs. They are able to remote into these VMs. They can remote in Linux VMs as well. And we have introduced virtual networks. Now, if you're very interested in the virtual networks piece, there was a session on Tuesday by Greg Cosanza. I would suggest you guys watch the video. For those interested, we've enabled site-to-site connectivity. The concept is really that, as an enterprise, I can bring my network and extend it into the Contoso's network and enable those virtual machines to work across the two networks. So this feature was also enabled, and one of the top asks was for the ability of a tenant to bring their own IP address to this virtual network. So that is something that has also been enabled in this release. Additional services. You guys, I just saw the Active Directory support in the demo. Something that wasn't enabled in Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, but something we have just enabled right now. We also have the concept of co-administrators. So, you know, if I own a subscription, I can add my whole team, a whole AD group, as a co-administrator to my subscription, so we can share the different resources that any of the folks in the subscription have created. So this is a new concept that is in Azure and has also been brought to the private cloud. On the database services, SQL Server, we have enabled SQL Always On, so folks can provide high availability to their tenants. And finally, we have, you know, programmatic access across that service management API layer with APIs that are consistent with Azure as well. So we're going to go into a demo focused on virtual machines, and Mark is going to present that, so I'm going to hand it over to him.
Thanks, Anjali. Amen, I need... Amen. It's locked. Thanks. Okay, so this is a different installation, actually running on a bunch of servers in Redmond, actually, this time. So I've logged in as myself with my corporate identity, and I am clicking on the virtual machines tab. You see here that there are both standalone virtual machines, which have been created from Virtual Machine Manager VM templates, and created through the portal still, okay? And there's also a new type of VM called the virtual machine role, which Anjali had described. So let me just get into how they're created. You might have seen this in the day one keynote. I can click new virtual machine role from gallery. And it brings up a set of gallery items that have been offered to me by my administrator. And in different plans, you might have different offerings of these gallery items, but in this case, this is the list that's available to me, and this is the same gallery item that was used in the keynote again, but it will go through a little more details. So I'll click Next. I'll provide a name. Notice that I can provide, I can install more than one version. In this case, I'll just do 1.0, and I can pick which subscription to create them under. So in this case, I have multiple subscriptions. So I can click Next. And that'll bring up a set of options for me. So in this case, I have options that are about virtual machine settings. And then I'll have another page later which will talk about application settings. So in these virtual machine role templates, there are two pieces. These two virtual machine container pieces, and then the actual application that installs inside of that virtual machine. Down here in the settings, you'll notice that there's instance count. And that wasn't possible with a standalone VM, which makes sense, right? This is a scalable tier of homogeneous virtual machines. So I have in this range, in the gallery item, defined a minimum instance count of 1 and a maximum instance count of 5. Down here, I can get a list of virtual machine sizes that have been standardized by my IT administrator, in this case, to match the sizes that prior to having the A6 and A7 were exactly the same as Azure. The settings on these, the number of cores and the RAM associated with them, are configured in Virtual Machine Manager. Okay, for the preview release, this is a fixed list, but for RTM, we're taking a DCR where this list can be completely changed depending on the needs of the provider. So you can have different values here, both for the lists, what's in the list, and what the values are in each of the items in the list. So I'll stick with extra small. Here I have the OS virtual hard disk. Okay, so what's happening here is that virtual hard disks are tagged in Virtual Machine Manager, and then the gallery item looks for virtual hard disks that meet the needs and by having the same tags that it's looking for. So in this one, it has something like Windows Server 2012 as a tag, and it finds the VHD that's associated with that and matches that in a loosely coupled way. And what that enables us to do is to provide these templates for multiple environments. So you can take this to your dev, test, staging production environments with different real images, right, different VHDs, and yet still use the same template. If I scroll down, you see that I can pick in network. I can give a admin username and password. I think maybe one more thing to point out down here is computer name pattern. So each of the computer host names, right, the actual machine names, will be, you can describe in a wildcarding pattern. So you can have, you know, if this, for in this case, it'll be computer 001, and then for the first one, computer 002 for the second one, et cetera, okay? So once I finish the VM settings, then again, I can now go and configure application settings as a tenant. And in this case, the application install will deploy a website into IIS, a really simple example. We'll actually make this example available to the community, to the public, and to try out this feature, along with some other ones. And look for that in the next month or two. I don't know exactly when we're going to be able to release these. But so in this case, I can, you know, change the website name, the app pool, what port it's on. I can click the checkbox, and it will go and create the virtual machine with two instances. Okay, that'll take some time, so let's look at one that's already been created. Here, I'll click you down into HR Web, and in the dashboard, and you can see that it has some interesting information about the usage. So what happens in any of my subscriptions, I get a quota of how many cores, RAM, number of amount of storage, and number of virtual machines. And so this green bar says this is how much this virtual machine role is using. The dark one is other ones that I'm using, and then the one all the way to the right is the limits. Okay? And then I have some devices on the thing. Another thing that's interesting is down if I go to instances, you see I have two virtual machines here. So I click into one of those. I get very similar now controls to when I was able to control only one VM on a standalone VM. And I get some information like IP addresses and such, right? If I go over to scale, you see just like the website's capability, I can slide the slider bar, hit save, and say this is 4. So if I hit save, the system will create two more VM instances for me without having to do any extra work. So this can be done manually like this, or even maybe via some automation, you know, that may be triggered on, you know, high traffic or something. So you can imagine how you might be able to do something like that via the APIs. One more thing to point out is that I captured the settings in a configuration and stored that along with a VM in VMM so that I captured the settings in the wizard, and I can change these and apply that to the role, and it will go and the system will reconfigure to that, those new declared parameters. Okay? Now, I did have a new version available to me as well, and you can see that it's displayed there like a notification to upgrade, right, if I want to. And I can do that by clicking this button. It'll pop open the wizard again and pick a new version. And I click next, and then I can get the same wizard to fill out, and that'll upgrade me to the new version. Some of these settings will apply to the existing instances. Some of them might apply to new instances that would be created. Okay, and Virtual Machine Manager does a really good job of making sure that your VMs persist. It would never do a destructive operation. So if there's something that would result in a destruction, if we didn't create a new instance, we would just leave them alone. This upgrade will also be done in a systematic way such that the tier will never go down. So we'll do one VM at a time to keep the app up, basically. Okay. So that is the, you know, introduction to the new virtual machine role. I encourage you to take some time and investigate it by installing it and playing with it yourself. One more good feature that comes, I'll just do this really quick, is that there's this new console connect feature. So if you go to a machine that's either not having an OS or not having a network, or in this case, doesn't have something that you can remote to in the guest because using a remote desktop like Linux, you have a new feature now that you click console, connect console. It downloads an RDP file to your device. based on your subscription and your access to that machine, downloads that file. I can click open. And now I can remote to a machine that may not have a network, again, or may not have a guest OS that supports this operating system, right? So that supports a remote desktop, excuse me. This is done using new features in Windows Server 2012 R2, new features in System Center 2012 R2, SPF, and pretty soon in VMM. And there's a lot of details around that we had covered in the session that we did on Infrastructure as a Service on Wednesday morning. So please look out for that if you're interested in those details. Okay. So I think that's all I wanted to show on this demo. So let me now turn over and we'll start switching gears a little bit. So the first thing I want to point out, just to make it very clear, Windows Azure Pack is installed on servers in your data center. Okay, we've had a lot of people come up and be confused about this. Windows Azure Pack installed on your machines, not Azure. There's nothing. We're just taking the software that's running in Azure and allowing you to run it on Windows Server. Okay, so the prerequisites are Windows Server 2012 or R2, SQL 2012 SP1 or higher, okay, information in, you know, IIS, and then .NET 3.5 and 4.0. Okay, so that's it. When you deploy this, you have some front-end things that face the internet, like a tenant portal. There's also the ability to address the API layer through a public access. So you can have tenant APIs facing the internet, right? So you can imagine dev and test scenarios are very interested in things like that, where you can go provision VMs via automation, right? There's also a bunch of servers behind the firewall, right? So there's a SQL server where you store the database. There's different API services running potentially on different servers, right? The admin portal is, of course, beyond the firewall because, you know, if you can't get in, you know, a lot of people have said they didn't want to expose that to the internet, so we pulled that back behind the firewall. ADFS would be back there too. And then those API services go back and touch the resource providers. So that's kind of the general deployment architecture, right? There are detailed guidance on how to deploy this thing in the preview guidance associated with the R2 release, so please look out for that as well. Okay? So let's now talk about service providers. What do service providers need to do to offer these services, and what's some of the capabilities there? So we'll go in and start talking about some administrative capabilities. Then we'll I'll let Eamon come and do some demos and describe the new features around automation. And then finally, we'll wrap up with usage and reporting. Okay? So the concept here with the Azure Pack is that a provider offers services to tenants via plans. Okay? And then a tenant subscribes to those plans and creates a subscription. Okay? We have, again, a lot more details in our afternoon session yesterday with Eamon and I gave it, talking about administering and automating IaaS cloud. So if you want the technical details behind that, please look at that session. Okay? You can also provide add-ons to existing subscriptions. And then the admin can manage these things, administer services. And, of course, you have the ability to extend and customize, as was described by Anjali earlier. Okay, so rather than... talking about the I accidentally closed the window. Take a second here. Actually, you know what? Let me go over to this portal. Oops. I'm going to go back to the one that Anjali already had open. Okay, so here in the VM clouds, let me just zoom in a little bit too. I wish you were able to read that now. Okay, so in the VM clouds, what you have to do is register to an SPF endpoint with credentials. That comes in and brings in clouds that have been configured in Virtual Machine Manager. And what you can do is click into, say, the gold cloud, and you get to see the usage of virtual machines on that cloud. So, you know, you can do some reporting as well, and there's, you know, management of that, you know, using Virtual Machine Manager and Office Manager. But if you just want to get a quick glance, you can click, go in and click through there. There is the ability to query for all the virtual machines that tenants are have generated, and then you can go in and help to manage those if they call in for on the phone or something like that. Then there's also the same, you can get a list of networks and manage those as well for tenants. Another thing that's really interesting is that we have the ability to link to automation so that you can go add, say, a new virtual machine is created, then you can, or sorry, when, wrong one. When a virtual machine is created or updated, I think I already created the created one, you can link to a runbook. So say a machine was updated, go create a ticket and log it or something. And I can just click this box, and then I'll have created a link between an action that's calling in the API in Service Provider Foundation and run a runbook with the input parameters that were associated with that call. Okay? And then the last thing you can do is manage the gallery items that were offered in the tenant portal. Okay, so you can import them, publish them to have access to tenants, and add them to plans. So in this case, you can see that decide which plans to add them to, for example, by doing that and then clicking add. Okay? So down in the plans area, if you click into, say, the gold plan, you can see that there's a number of services associated with that plan. Okay, so in this case, I'm offering websites, virtual machines, SQL servers, MySQL servers, and Service Bus. Okay? So if you look in, say, the virtual machines cloud, you see that it's tied to a specific VMM server in cloud inside of that VMM server. Here is where I have limits on each of the I have quotas on each of these metrics, like number of VMs, number of RAM, etc. Down here, there's the associated networks, profiles, and VM templates, and gallery items that are allowed for that anybody that subscribes to that plan. So after a tenant, I'll go out. So now I'm down in the tenant, and if I want to, right? So if I go and down and look at, oops, I just cleared this more time. If I go in and look at an account, you can see that I have subscribed to more than one plan, and I have two different subscriptions associated with it. So I have a user account that subscribes to one or more plans is kind of the way to think about it. And for each of these subscriptions, I have a certain amount of usage. So if you click in there, you can see that I have usage tracked against all of the services. You can see that I have certain people that are co-administrators. That's the feature that Anjali was talking about later. And you also can see if I have any add-ons. In this case, I don't have any. Okay, so that's a quick tour of the administrative capabilities associated with the Windows Azure Pack. Okay, with that, I'll turn it over to Eamon, who will now talk about automation. You can use that.
Thanks, Mark.
One.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to bring all these new capabilities from Azure and give them to you guys so you can actually run them in your own data centers and offer the same type of services out. But one thing we wanted to do, I think you Anjali mentioned earlier, you know, when we run it inside of Azure, there's a bunch of scripts and tools we use to make sure that the infrastructure stays up and you actually can deliver those services on demand. And so what we wanted to do was bring some of those capabilities to actually you as well, so you could do a very similar thing and ensure that all of your infrastructure actually is maintained and delivered in an automatic way. And so we have a feature now called Service Management Automation that's part of Orchestrator inside a System Center that you can actually use to automate and maintain everything you have in your data center without actually having to do manual tasks. So how many people are used to Orchestrator or have used it inside a System Center? Great. So quite a few of you. So it's a very similar capability to that, and you actually install it as part of Orchestrator. The one difference it is based on PowerShell workflow, and the portal itself is surfaced inside of this admin portal I'm going to show you now. And then I'll walk you through all the different capabilities it has. Okay, so this is the admin portal, and inside of here we have this new space called automation. And if you click on here, this is where you, as a service admin or administrator of your services plus your infrastructure, can actually go and administrate and automate everything you have inside of your data center. And so the top you can see here will show you all of the jobs that are runbooks that have gone over time. So you can go and troubleshoot them. You can see there's a failed one or suspended. You could actually go in and figure out what's going on there. We also have a set of runbooks. So this is where you're going to create discrete tasks. Because what you want to do is you want to do IT process automation. So you want to basically automate everything in your data center. But you're not just automating all the stuff we're going to give you as part of the Azure Pack and System Center and Windows. Most of our customers also have other systems in their environments. They may have different ticketing systems. They may have different infrastructure that they need to integrate their own custom solutions. With Orchestrator and this automation capability, you can actually integrate into every single system you might need using PowerShell and actually create end-to-end processes. And so what you see here are a bunch of runbooks that actually can complete end-to-end processes. So let me just do a quick demo here. So I'm going to just focus on the ones we want to work on. So I typed in SLA, so all of these are doing a cloud SLA. And so what I'm going to show you in this scenario is you probably saw when Mark went through some of that, we had clouds that are being offered by VMM. So we had a gold plan, silver, bronze plan. And what you want to be able to do is make sure that the SLA you've promised to your end users is actually maintained. And so how we enable that with System Center and Windows and the Azure Pack is we actually use Operations Manager that comes as part of System Center to monitor Virtual Machine Manager and make sure all those clouds we're offering up are staying healthy. And if something goes wrong, you'll see alerts, and then you can take action on top of those. And so what I'm going to do with these runbooks here is I'm going to integrate into Operations Manager, look for those alerts. If I find an alert on one of those clouds, I'm automatically going to add new hardware. So I'm going to add a new host into Virtual Machine Manager automatically, and then I can go and install an agent, an Operations Manager agent on that new host, so it also is being monitored. And then if anything goes wrong, I can open up a ticket, and I can call in. I also have a thing that calls into SharePoint to track the item. So it just shows you from inside of this one place, you can integrate into everything you have inside of your data center and then automate all the processes involved. So let me drill into a couple real quick. So you have monitor new host. And so what this is going to do, I have it in edit mode. This will actually add a new operations manager agent directly to that host after it's been added to VMM. So I'm going to click on draft. And you can see here, I actually have hard-coded this, my host name, when I was actually putting these demos together. So what I'm going to do is change that, and actually I'm going to add some PowerShell. So we can take a parameter instead, a string parameter, and the name is host name. So this is all standard PowerShell, and you can see now, instead of hard-coding, I'm going to take it as a value into this small runbook. And then it doesn't do a lot. After this, it just gets the credentials. You can see I'm storing the credentials securely inside of automation, so you don't have to put any passwords inside of here. We'll just retrieve them for you and then use them down here when we actually go and install the SCOM agent. So it's only a few lines of code, and it actually just goes and does the work. And I could test this out if I wanted to and ensure that this specific runbook is good. You can see it automatically read the parameters and gave me the ability to test this out. So I'll go ahead and publish this one. And if I go back, I can do a very similar thing here. Quickly find the ones I'm interested in. And I think I have one more in edit, which is the remediate cloud. So what this one does, this is the one that adds the host to it. So I'll go into draft again. You can see I'm trying not to hard code anything. All these are stored in our system. So those resources tab you saw at the top, everything is maintained there that you can use inside of a runbook. I connect to the VMM server. This is all standard PowerShell. Of course, we can do checkpointing because PowerShell workflow supports that, and that is what we are based on. And you can see I'm opening up tickets. But the one thing here is I want to install an agent if I get a host. So how would I do that? I would just go insert runbook. And then that one I just created is available to me right here. And you can see it actually read the parameters and inserts it. So all I need to provide is actually the name of the host that needs the agent. And if you look up there at the top, you can see it's called extra host. Again, that's a variable that's maintained inside of our system. So you can manage these outside of the runbooks. And then you can just go, there we go, IntelliSense, and be able to use it. So there. Now this runbook is good to go. I actually call into Orchestrator as well to open up an item in SharePoint. Again, I'm just going to publish it very seamlessly. And what I've done here is now these library of small tasks, these small runbooks that do specific work, I've actually brought them all together to do that end-to-end process that I just talked about in the beginning. So I'll just filter them out. Okay, so what I'm going to do is just check for cloud memory alert. I'm going to try to kick off this one and see how it goes. Okay, so it's off and running. It should actually take a while, because what it's really doing right now is if I go into Operations Manager, so you're probably familiar with this, you know, all the clouds that Virtual Machine Manager is offering up and servicing out, they're being monitored inside of here. So you can see all the different clouds. And if I went back into any of the resources, you could see the cluster health. And inside of here, you can see it has an error. So, you know, its host cluster is overcommitted. And so one of the resolutions for that is to actually add another host so you can actually get it back healthy again. And so in my small runbook, I'm just looking for this specific alert. And if I find that, then I'm going to take action, install another host automatically into VMM, install the agent, and then if anything goes wrong, open up a ticket. Some, you know, most of you would do this manually or maybe through some scripts you have in your environment. So that's how the whole end-to-end actually starts to work. And if I go back, I'll just look and see how things are running. I can view the job and find out how far it's gotten. So you can see here it's actually running, so it's performing the work, and I can actually go back and figure out. If I wanted to see what happened before, you can see I did one earlier. I can drill in. And so every single job that you ever run, we actually maintain the history of that over time. So if anything goes wrong in your environment, it's not a one-off thing. You can actually go back, figure out exactly what happened, and then troubleshoot that, get it back up, and be able to continue to automate. So the whole idea behind this is, once we give you all these new capabilities, we want to give you the ability to actually integrate your entire data center. And so as those end users request something like a VM or they request anything you want to offer, you actually have the ability through PowerShell workflow and through the automation capabilities to automate and deliver that for them on demand. So the real goal is if you ever try to do things manually, you're really starting to break down on the cloud idea. Okay, so I think that's done. I can actually probably, if I wanted to look at them, you might be able to see. Yeah, so here it is. So this is the new host that I just added. It automatically got into VMM. And if I went back into Operations Manager, hopefully we might see that there's a new agent that's showing up, that same agent. Maybe it's under here. Yep, so it's in progress right now. So that host I added into VMM to back those clouds, now, just while I was talking through that, the agent's been installed there, and it's also going to show up as part of the overall cloud and maintain its health in the exact same way. So you get the idea that once we actually build up all this infrastructure, we want you to have the ability now to ensure it stays healthy and maintain it without doing any manual tasks, just by using the capabilities of Orchestrator and the service management automation. Okay, with that, I'll hand back to Mark. I think he's going to finish up on some service reporting.
Thanks, Eamon. All right, so the last thing we wanted to talk about was the new capabilities around usage and reporting. Okay, so each of the subscriptions in the Windows Azure pack are continuously metered. So there's actually a usage metering service that runs that puts usage data in a data cache which then in a database with a temporary cache of a few, say 45 days or something like that, and then there's an API that is available for people that are having billing systems to call and store that data in a persistent way, so that they can support billing of tenants, for example, or chargebacks, if you're an enterprise. Okay. There's been a new way to collect that data added for the Windows Azure pack, and that's the IaaS data warehouse. So this data warehouse actually does an ETL job by hitting that billing API, transforming that down into the data warehouse, and then producing OLAP cubes. Okay, once you have the OLAP cubes produced on that usage information, then you can use the power of the Microsoft BI stack to analyze that data. So you can use Excel or Power or Performance Point, which is a feature of SharePoint, to analyze that usage information. Okay, so these are some new capabilities. And the last thing that is being introduced in the R2 wave is server inventory reports. And that really helps service providers keep track of their licenses so they can comply with their SPLA licensing agreements. Okay? So let me go and show you what that looks like. So let me start with this. Okay, so usage data about Versa machines has been extracted, right, from that billing API and put in the OLAP cubes, you know, coming from the IaaS data warehouse. Okay? I can connect to that cube and generate using Power Pivot analysis using just Excel. Okay, so this is just Excel. Okay, and what I can do, if you let me scroll in a little bit, you can see the numbers. What I can do on this data is I can add down here use for per user role or use per subscription. So you see here now I've carved up the total amount of usage and carved it up across the different subscriptions I had in the system. Okay, the next thing I can do is maybe further drill down by time. So I can simply go more fields, calendar month, put that in there, and now per subscription for each month, how much was used, whether it's cores, RAM, runtime, okay? And then I can drill down even further and maybe slice by virtual machine name. And now for each of the month, for each of the subscriptions, for each month, for each VM, how much was being used. And you can imagine a lot of, you know, self-service analysis of this data for you can be done without a lot of extra skills around doing SQL queries and things like that. Like, I don't know how to do that, but I definitely know how to use Excel, so this is really great for me. Another thing you can do using the Microsoft BI stack is light up Performance Point. So, and that's a feature of SharePoint here, and SharePoint Enterprise, I believe. So I have that kind of loaded up already. And you can produce dashboards like this and watch usage over your service, your IaaS service, for example. So, for example, I can click into one of these reports, say VM runtime across subscriptions, and it'll go and show me that same information in a nice, pretty graph. I can further just move this over there. That annoys me for some reason. Okay, and then I can do things like drill down to usage for VM, but this time in a graphical form, right? So, you know, this is pretty graphs, but I mean, it really makes a powerful set of tools once you have the data in that OLAP cube, once you put it in the data warehouse. Okay, so there's a lot of new capabilities that are lighting up. It just comes out of the box with a Windows Azure pack. There's no extra, you know, fees you have to pay, right? So I thought I'd want to share that with you. Right. So you've seen basically a wide range of capabilities associated with this pack, right? You've seen a bunch of Azure consistent services for websites, virtual machines, service bus, powerful capabilities around automation, administration, usage, and reporting. And this is all built on, you know, the common base of Microsoft Cloud technology, including Windows Server and System Center, right? So all of this also running in your data center on your servers, right? Yet leveraging the technology that we have developed and the experience that we developed by learning by running Azure as a service ourselves in Microsoft. Okay? So this is the vision of the cloud operating system realized in something that you can download and deliver yourself. The Windows Azure Pack is free if you have licenses for System Center and Windows Server. There's nothing extra to pay. It's not a new product offering that you have to pay extra license money for. It just comes with what we already ship in the box. Okay? So I think we're done with our session now. So thanks, everyone, for listening. I think we have a couple minutes to answer questions. But first, I want to, you know, a lot of people that need to take off to take off. So thanks a lot. Yeah, and so we'll be happy to take questions for a couple more minutes if anybody has any time. Yep. Yeah. Oh, here's a microphone. Maybe you can repeat the question.
Hi. So you showed VM roles and templates. Mm-hmm. How those can be created?
Yeah. So the question was around authoring of virtual machine role templates. Okay. So first of all, I'll refer you to the session where we went into great detail about showing the details of that. But at the high level, you need to author the templates in JSON. Okay, so they're not XML. They're not using some proprietary format. They're just written in JSON. The way that we, so you could do it by hand. We are going to come out with the kind of a unsupported community authoring tool, which we demoed in yesterday. So that we'll have an authoring tool that'll basically, given what you want to achieve, generate a resource extension file, a resource definition file, and a view definition, where are the elements that are required to author one of those templates.
Hi. I have two questions. First, a short one. Does this have any relationship with the former cloud services process pack?
Okay. Okay. The first question was, does this have relation to the cloud service process pack, which is a solution across a service manager and virtual machine manager doing private cloud stuff.
Yeah.
And the answer is no. It is a separate thing. We are looking in the future at taking some of the scenarios around that and incorporating it into this offering.
And the second question, if I may, what System Center components are needed to implement this solution? So
yeah.
Does it need operation manager, service manager, orchestrator?
Yeah, great question. So so what components are needed to deploy this on the from System Center or anything else? Okay, so I already mentioned what is required to deploy the Windows Azure Pack itself. The underlying services require, for virtual machines, you need Virtual Machine Manager, Service Provider Foundation as the core thing. If you want usage information, you also need the Operations Manager Data Warehouse, which means you need Operations Manager. Okay. For the service management automation, you install a separate server that has the service management automation bits, so that's required for that scenario. The website's features, it's just a bunch of Windows servers with IIS and SQL again. And for Service Bus, I think it's the same. I think it just needs IIS and SQL.
It's just Windows Server.
So that's it. Okay, any more questions? Okay, thank you very much. You can come up. We'll be up here for a little bit afterwards. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.